You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 180.
You know, I didn't even bother getting an interesting fact about 180 because there's just so much that we already know about it. Just turn around. Every now and then? No?
180 degree turn.
Hello, everybody. It is episode 180. We are delighted to be here with you. I'm a little bit less sick than I was before. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me. And we're here to talk about Valentine's Day.
We are. It's Valentine's week.
I love you.
Some people hate this holiday. We kind of, I guess, like this holiday. I don't know.
We're ambivalent about this holiday.
I'm pretty ambivalent about this holiday. But this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Did you know that that old 401k that you have from an old employer may be getting weighed down by fees? Brightscope recently reported that average fees for small plans range between 1.5 and 2% with, quote, plenty of plans paying more than 2% a year in fees.
Yuck!
Luckily, your 401k has to report the fees that you're paying, so if you look at your statements carefully, the fees should be in there. To give you some context, if you left $10,000 in an old 401k that was charging a 2% administration fee, 20 years later, that fee would have cost you almost $5,000.
Wow.
That's crazy. If you want help looking at your 401ks to make sure you're not overpaying, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up a time to chat. Thank you, First Move Financial, for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
So, Valentine's Day. As we said, Andrew and I are actually kind of ambivalent about Valentine's Day. We don't love it, but we don't hate it either. It's just a day, and maybe we do something nice if we can.
Yeah, pretty much it's like if the schedule happens to allow something.
Pretty much, yeah.
We'll, like, get ice cream or something without the children.
Go on a little mini date.
Yeah, we're pretty boring.
However, some people are really into it, and that's cool. And so we thought a little bit about games that you might like to play with your date for this Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so I think what we'll do, we'll talk a little bit about what makes a good date game, and then maybe just some recommendations from games that we've played that did work, didn't work, stuff like that. It'll be fun.
And a few suggestions from our listeners.
Yes, absolutely.
But first,
what have we been playing?
Well, so life has been super busy with you being sick and me picking up the slack. Ha!
Not really.
But we're finally catching up again. So there has not been a ton of game playing. However, I did take out our daughter, Claire, for a special little mommy date.
Aww.
So she was my gaming buddy this week. And with her, I played Bon Appetit.
Okay.
And then on our little mommy date, we started with Kintsugi, which is one of my favorites to just carry around with me all the time. I actually saw the word Kintsugi used as a verb in a story the other day.
Oh, really?
About something being cracked open and then Kintsugi'd back together.
Oh, well, I mean, that's like, the idea of the verb, so there you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just neat to see. And then we played one of her and my favorites, which is Filler. And then we played a very quick game of Pocket Ops before we ran out of time and had to come home.
Yeah, Pocket Ops, the tic-tac-toe Uber game.
Yeah, well, it's the tic-tac-toe prediction game. And there's all kinds of special powers and stuff in there, too. But the core of the game is I predict where you're going to go. And then if you go there, you don't get to keep your piece there. And then you predict where I'm going to go. And we go back and forth. And that was it. That's all the time for gaming I've had this weekend.
So I actually got to host our Commentar game night this week. So there was lots of game playing. We were totally full up. Every table had people playing games. It was awesome. I only played two games because I was running around and like teaching people how to play games and stuff.
But you love it.
Somebody brought their copy of Tussie Mussie.
Hey!
So I played some Tussie Mussie. A great game. It's a wonderful date game.
It is.
It's a very nice, laid back, beautiful game from Elizabeth Hargrave. And then I taught a bunch of people how to play Dungeon Academy, So yay. I get to play a little bit of Dungeon Academy, which is the roll and write from the op that we snapped last week before, something like
recently.
That. Recently. Fairly recently. So those are the games that I've played. That's actually it. I have not played a lot. It just has been really, really difficult. But I got to help people learn how to play Sagrada this week. I got to teach Drop It, which is, you know, a big common hit all the time. I got to teach Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Nice.
Which was lots of fun. And then, let's see, there was some Space Team that was played and just a couple of other games. Space Team was, as always, lots of fun. They were getting super loud and screaming and yelling and doing all that crazy stuff. So that was a blast. We are going on like a work retreat this weekend. So we're going to be able to game our faces off. So next week, we're going to have a lot of games on our list, I hope.
Yeah, because we'll be playing games on the plane. We'll be playing games with your coworkers when you get there. Yeah, lots of games.
So by the time this episode comes out, we'll actually already be back. But hopefully we'll have a large stable of games in our BG stats.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
And before we go to break, I have a report. We went to a Super Bowl party this past week because it was the Super Bowl. That's what you do. And I drank a new and interesting beverage.
I suppose this could count as a for science.
For science. So
for science.
I found out, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago that at Dollar General and only Dollar General, they were selling Maui Blast Mountain Dew.
And so you bought some.
I mean, I had to. I went to Dollar General to buy this Mountain Dew.
Well, I mean, let's be clear here. This wasn't just any Mountain Dew, and it wasn't another super gross flavor of Mountain Dew, of which there are plenty.
This is true. Baja Blast at Taco Bell, not good Mountain Dew. I'm not even like a Mountain, like I used to drink a lot of Mountain Dew, but I don't drink Mountain Dew anymore.
I was a huge fan.
I had to call back my memory.
But this Maui Blast, I think it was called, is a pineapple flavored Mountain Dew. It was surprisingly good.
I would say it was surprisingly not bad, which is similar but different from what you just said.
If you like Mountain Dew, you would almost certainly like this.
Yeah, I get like it.
If you don't like Mountain Dew, don't go out of your way to try this.
I mean, look, if someone handed you a cup and it had a drink in it and they were like, oh, this stuff is this new drink, and you tried it, you would not say this is a flavor of Mountain Dew.
I might have, but that's
fine. It's the same kind of like artificial carbonated fruit-like thing. But other than that, it was pretty much just almost like pineapple soda.
It was pineapple soda, but it did have that weird, I don't know, yellow flavor that Mountain Dew
that,
has.
It's that, it's like a mouthy sugar feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It tastes like Yellow Five.
It's almost like a, like pulpy, but not pulpy. It's body to the drink that comes from sugar.
There is a reason why, even once I was starting to count calories, I would not drink diet Mountain Dew, but I would occasionally still drink regular Mountain Dew because when you drop the sugar, you really do lose something from that horrible, awful, wonderful, artificial flavor.
See, and I'm kind of the opposite because I'm like, okay, well, if the only Mountain Dew I'm going to let myself drink is Diet Mountain Dew, then I guarantee you I'm going to drink less of it because it's just not as appetizing.
I'm just not going to drink it.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Which also works. All right, so that was for science.
For science. Maui Blast Mountain Dew. Dollar General. It wasn't bad. It came in pint cans, which made me feel weird drinking it.
That was a little strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. But resounding, meh. All right, let's go to a break.
All right, we'll be right back. I am hungry for some fancy food.
What's the fanciest food you've ever eaten?
That's a good question.
Well, only the finest dishes are worthy of the gourmet diners in Bon Appetit, a game for 2 to 4 players from Strawberry Studio.
Bon Appetit was designed by Gilad Yarnitsky. It plays in less than 20 minutes and is suitable for ages 8 and up.
So let's talk about how you play Bon Appetit. Each player starts with a hand of randomly chosen gems, either 4 or 5 gems, depending on the player count. In the center of the table is a gem value card, which assigns a value between 1 and 4 for each color of gem.
Set 3 cards out to be the menu, then pull out the rightmost card to be the first dish.
Everybody will bid on this dish. All players choose some number of gems from their hand as their secret bid. Once everyone has chosen, reveal.
The bidder with the highest value that they've bid gets the dish, and they have to return their gems to the bag.
everybody else gets their bid gems back to use in other bids later.
Now it's time to change the values of the gems. After a player has won the current dish, the values of the gems change. Colors that were used go down in value. Colors that were missing from the winning bid go up in value by one.
Now it's time to refill the menu, pull a dish out again, and bid again. Repeat this process until 12 dishes have been played and won. Then each player adds up the score from their own dishes, and the player with the highest score wins.
There's a couple things to know about the game. Ties require you to do a tiebreaker bid. You can almost think of this kind of like war. Many dishes give bonuses to future bids.
And if you make an empty bid, that's no gems in your bid, then you get to draw a gem from the bag back into your hand.
That's the only way to get more gems. So sometimes you're just going to have to give up on winning a card.
So let's talk about how we feel about Bon Appetit.
I'm so mixed about this game. I really wanted to like this game a lot. The pictures are a little bit weird, but really well done and really cool.
I mean, it definitely fits this theme of ultra fancy food.
Yep. I do like the adjustable value bidding. So the gem prices changing based on whether they've been used or not. That's a nice feature. I've seen it in a couple of other games. And I think that that's nice and simple in this game. I like that.
Yeah, it's done in a very simple way. And I like that it means no one ever gets stuck with a low value hand, at least not for very long.
So those are good things. Bad things. Why are we playing this game?
There's no motivation here. You just, okay, well, we're bidding on food. Okay, and then what? Oh, we're bidding on more food until the food is gone. Okay.
Yeah, you see some of the food that's coming up, so there's a little bit of strategy in figuring out whether you want this piece or the next piece that's coming, but that's about it.
You can't look very far ahead because you don't know what other people are going to bid, and so how gem values are going to change.
I mean, those things are good, though. Like, that's the best part of the game. But here's the problem. A lot of the cards have special abilities on them.
Which is good.
The problem is, there are special abilities that affect other cards a lot of the time. And if you pull them out of the deck in the wrong order, those special abilities become completely useless, and there's no reciprocal abilities.
Yeah, we found that more than half of the special abilities that we saw ended up being completely useless in every play.
Just the way the cards would come out. Some card would give you a plus one bidding bonus on this other card that came out three rounds ago. So there's no recycling of cards into the deck in any way. So having these abilities is not helpful.
Even the ones that give you a bonus for certain colors of gems. Well, if you don't currently have that color of gems in your hand, you may or may not see that color of gems again.
There's only 12 rounds to the game. You can only pull a maximum of 12 extra gems into your hand. So the gem color bonus stuff is really only valuable based on what you already have because it's completely unpredictable what you're going to get.
It would be a lot less frustrating if these special abilities were reciprocal. So the Samurai Steak gives you a plus one when bidding on black caviar lobster omelets.
Which sound like grossly delicious.
They just sound gross to me. But the black caviar lobster omelets give you a bonus on something completely different. It would make a lot more sense if each one of them gave a plus one bonus when bidding for the other thing.
So what that tells us about the game is it just needed to be playtested more. They needed to go through cycles with this game where they saw things come out in the wrong order and how detrimental that was to the flow of the game.
In addition, most of our plays of Bon Appetit were with our preteen, who's a bit of a foodie. She likes cooking. She likes looking at cookbooks and new kinds of food. She really disliked the ultra fancy food pictured, probably partly because there was caviar or mushrooms in seemingly every dish.
I mean, the game is definitely trying to go for that really upper crust, hyper pretentious thing. So that's not that much of a surprise.
Yeah, the food is expensive because it can be expensive, not because it's necessarily delicious.
The other thing that's a huge problem is that we found the text on the card surprisingly hard to read. They were going for this fancy cursive, so the dish names were difficult to read. You had to take a second or third look at them, which is exactly the opposite of what you want in a card game.
And beyond that, even the special abilities, which were in a standard serif font, those were hard to read too, because the text was really small and it's against a golden background, which means the contrast wasn't great.
We liked the central mechanic of the gem value shifting. But beyond that, there just really wasn't enough here to make this a game that we're going to go back to.
Overall, this might be a fun one-off for some hyper foodie in your life.
I mean, maybe
about $15.
A niche gift at some kind of goofy food party or something.
Yeah, but overall, not recommended.
So what are we going to rate Bon Appetit?
I think we rate it 2 ostentatious courses out of 5.
All right, and that's Bon Appetit
in a snap. And we're back.
We're going to talk about date stuff.
Date night.
Date night, date night. Date night is like super exciting in our family because, I mean, it doesn't really happen that often. And we get to go away somewhere. And usually we play a game, actually.
We often play a game.
So let's talk about that. Like, what makes a good date game?
Well, let's lay down some ground rules first. When we're talking about a good date game, we're not necessarily talking about a game you would pack up and bring to a restaurant somewhere.
But we could
Although
be.
You could.
Yeah.
But I think there's also a second category, which is games that play really well at two players and aren't so thinky that you can't talk to each other.
That's a great point. So a couple of the games that I have in my mind are dedicated two-player games. One of them is extremely thinky.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that when we get there. And that really, I mean, it comes down to like a mood thing or just the personality of the people that are going out. But what you said is really, really important, which is you have to be able to converse around the game. Otherwise, and again, your mileage may vary. Different people are different. Mm-hmm. But the point of going on a date is to be social with the person that you're going on a date with. So yes, a game is a great way to for social interaction, but you don't want it to be so buried in the game that you're not actually like talking about real life, because that's kind of what the point of a date is.
Yeah, kind
of. And so one of the things that I look for when looking for a game that would qualify as a good date game for me is a perfect information game. And the reason why I say that is because if a game is a perfect information game, what that means is there's nothing hidden. Nobody mm-hmm. has a hand of cards. There's no secret whatever. And that means a couple of different things. Number one, many people would say it's the purest form of strategy, right? Because you can't hide things. It's not this cloak and dagger kind of deal.
Sure, sure.
But number two, if you get caught up in conversation and then return to the game,
you don't have to spend quite as much effort thinking about, where were I? How much information did I know? How much information
right.
did I reveal to the other person? You can kind of redevelop
your strategy by looking at the game.
Yeah.
And so perfect information games that play well at two players are, I think, ideal for a date kind of situation.
Which is not to say that that's the only kind of game, certainly. But yeah, it's good for that because you can talk through them or you can take a break and talk and come back to it.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. Exactly. So what else? What else makes a good date game?
I think a good date game stays away from themes that are too heavy or themes that are combative most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have a game that's cutthroat where you're really trying to win, but it's still a very different feel if you're trying to build the best flower garden or the best trees versus kill each other's
right.
guys.
So let me give you a perfect example of this. Magic the Gathering. Magic the Gathering is a game. It's incredibly popular. Lots of people play it. My sister used to play it with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They would sit down and they would have a casual, they would play a casual game of Magic and they would beat up on each other and they would enjoy the social experience, but they wouldn't go on a date to do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
So there's something, I don't want to call it like a mystique around the whole idea of a date, but there's something about a date that is necessarily less driven by conflict.
Yeah, well, and you want to get out of the ordinary everyday.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's part of it, but it's just like you said, you don't want to be literally beating down your opponent, or certainly in a way that is long and drawn out. So, I mean, I'll just mention one of the games that I think is an excellent date game is Onitama. And
I agreed. I have it on my list too.
And Onitama is a game where you are absolutely defeating your opponent and you are taking the opponent's pieces. But it's not something like Dice Throne or Magic the Gathering where you're beating your opponent down over a period of time.
Where you're bleeding them out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's a good example, I think, of why Onitama makes a better date game than Magic the Gathering or Dice Throne or something like that. And again, and I'm going to say this a bunch of times, this is very much a personality thing. It may be that some of these games that we say we don't really think this is a good date game, maybe it works really, really well for you. And that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So I think those are our two big criteria for mm-hmm. what makes a good date game mm-hmm. is it plays really well at two players. it's either perfect information or it's light enough that you can talk around it and not lose your place. And it's not overly combative in the bleed each other out sort of way.
Sure. And, you know, you said something earlier that I'm going to say I disagree with, which was that it doesn't need to be a game that is portable or something like that. I think that either you're going to a planned place or you're trying to be spontaneous when you're on a date. And in either of those situations, I think you're looking to move this thing around. Now, it could be a box like Onitama, which is not that big. It could be a button shy game, which is tiny, or a Paco game, which you can slide into your pocket, the size of a pack of gum. It could be even something a little bit bigger. I mean, the box could even be big, but the table presence can't be.
Sure.
Because most of the time when you're on a date, you're not going to a place exclusively to play a game. You're probably multitasking. Maybe you're eating something or you're having a drink or something like that along with whatever it is that you're doing. You don't want this game that takes up an entire 3x5 table.
Well, and again, a date is about being with each other, not about spreading out all over a table.
Not spending 20 minutes to set up a game, right?
Well, I'm also looking at, on our shelves, we have Tournament of Towers, which is a great game and does play really well at two players. That's this combination of drafting and then a dexterity building game.
Yep.
But you're building these super tall towers. You're trying to outcompete the other person. And your whole focus is going to be on your own tower. It's no longer something that really fosters any connection between the two of you.
Okay, so that's another thing that we can put in our list of bullet points for things that do or don't make a good date game. And this actually goes back to, I want to say it was probably 10 or 15 episodes ago or so, where we talked about games that had player interaction.
Mm.
And so when you look at a game like Dominion, which I know a lot of people like it, Donald Vaccarino has made a bajillion dollars with this game. I get it. It's fine. Whatever. It's not my favorite game. That's fine. But a game like that is essentially you're playing your game and someone else is playing their game, and it's like a race to the end. And when that's happening, you're really focused on what you're doing and less what the other person is doing. And so when you're looking at a game that is going to make a good date game, mm-hmm. you really want to have some player interaction. And it doesn't have to be, again, this idea where we're just progressively beating down our opponent.
Right.
But there's got to be interaction. Like, the whole point of this is that it's a social experience.
Yeah, and that you're doing something together, not together separately.
I mean, look, together separately is a wonderful thing. You like to read, and I like to play video games. Together separately on the couch works sometimes. I don't want to say it's bad.
Sometimes even you're playing a video game and I'm playing a different video game. We're playing video games together separately, which is fine.
Or I'm working and you're playing a video game or whatever. Like, whatever those things are, like, together separately is totally a thing. And I would say that together separately is something that is probably critical for every successful couple to experience.
It is part of a healthy relationship.
Absolutely. But you don't want it together separately on a date.
Right.
Okay, good.
Because that's not a date anymore.
I'm glad we cleared that one out. That's good.
All right. So why don't we move into yours and my suggestions for what we feel meets most or all of these criteria.
Okay, well, I already went first.
Because you said Onitama?
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right, fair enough. I mean, it was on my list too, but that's cool.
That's fair.
I don't think it will surprise anybody to say that I think Tussie Mussie is an excellent fit here.
Okay, I agree. You literally have to share with each other.
It's all about sharing. It's a split and choose game. It's super portable. And it's got this lovely theme of the secret language of flowers and mm-hmm. saying things like, you know, you are my true love, or aww, you are deceitful.
Oh. I try not to be.
I know.
Okay. All right. So I've got two games that I'm thinking of that bend the rules that we just set a little bit.
For shame.
I know, right? The first one is Shobu.
Shobu is a perfect information game. You mm-hmm. can only play it with two people.
You kind of bleed your opponent dry.
I kind of.
But it's like in a chess way, not in like a magic way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it bends the rule. I don't think it breaks the rule, but it bends the rule.
It does. It is still the kind of game where one sudden move and all of a sudden the game's over.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some bleeding feel to it, but not too much.
You know what I really like about Shobu? I mean, I've probably said this or tried to explain this thought in the back of my head about this game. Shobu is the kind of game where, like, if you opened a copy of like Boston Magazine or one of these like lifestyle magazines and two people, I don't know, hipsters in like a hipster coffee shop were playing a board game, like that's the game you want to see on the table.
That would be one,
you know,
for
it's just,
that, yes. It's got that presence and it just looks pretty and abstract and you wonder what the people are doing with the pieces that they have there, because it's not immediately obvious.
Right. So anyway, so that's my second game. That is Shobu from Smirk and Dagger. Smirk and Laughter. I don't know which brand Shobu is under, but that's another one that we really like. And I mean, we've talked about that game a lot. I mean, I don't think it's a surprise.
We really, really like that one. It is a little bit big and a little bit heavy.
It's heavy. It's not that big.
I guess it's not all that big.
Definitely,
but it's
heavy.
It's pretty heavy. And it's definitely big enough that this is a, ladies, if you have a big purse, this might fit in your purse.
Real big purse.
Maybe. Yeah. I think I have carried it in my purse. Did you say you had another one that bends the rules?
Oh, you want me to keep going?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the other one that bends the rules is Triplock.
Okay. That one is all about hidden information.
Yeah, but it's a very intense game.
It is a very intense game. I might have trouble with that as a date game because I'd be trying to keep track of so many pieces of information in my head.
Okay.
But it's very portable and the puzzliness of it is neat. And you are definitely interacting with the other person.
And I think that it's kind of the opposite of some of the stuff we talked about before, where this is a game that's going to just keep you laser focused on the game and looking at the other person and just really being engaged in what's going on. And so if one of those things in your relationship is when we're communicating, we need to be focused on communicating with each other, a game like Triplock actually helps that because you have to stay engaged. You have to keep your attention. Like if you struggle with ADD or something like that, Triplock's going to be a hard game for you because you have to pay attention to what's going on. But if you want to work on that, Triplock's a great way to go.
That's fair.
Beautiful, super high production value. Really, really interesting game. I was curious about it, so I picked it up, and I'm actually really glad that I did.
All right, well, I'm going to go back to a game that follows all the rules.
Okay.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. It actually is really hard to find those games that really nail it.
It follows all the rules, but it's a little bit on the bigger side. It is Saikatsu.
Okay.
It's birds and flowers, and there's only the tiniest amount of hidden information because you have two tiles in your hand and you can pick which one to lay down. But I love the fact that for an abstract, puzzly kind of game, you are interacting with the other player or players, because it goes up to three, in that you want to maximize your lines of flowers and try to minimize the other people's from the other directions.
Yep.
And the theme seems...
It seems soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next game on my list, I actually have a lot of these as I think through this, is Senshi.
Senshi's good. Senshi is another one that is a little bit of hidden information, but not really. Not really.
You have
very
like
much.
Two tiles in your hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something like that. So Senshi is this game where you're... It's basically like a set collection slash creation game.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of. It's really a nice little compact game that plays, I don't know, 2 to 3 players, something like that.
We haven't talked about it a whole lot, but it's a good game. All right, let me make another suggestion. This one might catch you a little bit by surprise. Cartographers. Cartographers has a nice small table presence and is a reasonably small box. It is a perfect information game, which is to say, information gets revealed. You can't always look ahead and see what's coming next, but no one player has any advantage in information over the others.
Okay.
Everybody knows all of the information that is available. And on top of that, there is player interaction because of when the little goblins come out. You swap papers and try to make the goblins an obstacle for the other person.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see more player interaction in a
date night game.
I think so.
I like that one because it leans more on the side of this is a game you can talk a lot while you're playing and then have the player interaction when you have to briefly swap.
Yeah, that's true. The next game on my list is kind of a classic two-player game, and that is Jaipur.
I knew you would mention that one.
Yep, Jaipur is a two-player set collection game where you're trying to be the best trader. There's a little bit of, I don't really think you'd call it take that with the camels.
It's more about biding your time.
I guess
choosing exactly
you
the
can
right
really
kind of
get somebody in the kidneys with a game like that, though. If you take or drop camels at an unexpected time,
sure,
it can be like, ugh.
Sure.
But that game does a really good job of balancing the player interaction and the focus on your personal play. Because you're going back and forth with the common cards in the middle, but you're absolutely working on what's in front of you in your tableau. And it's small. I like that game a lot.
Another super portable one is Not Dice.
Ooh, that's
and it's
pretty.
Also gorgeous.
It's super pretty. Yeah,
yeah.
These deep emerald dice with Celtic knot patterns on them.
It might be a little intimidating at first because there's 5 or 8 different games you can play. It's been quite a while since I did the review. Mm-hmm. These days, I pretty much just focus on two or three of the games that clicked the best with me. But it's got a lot of nice options for two-player, and they just feel nice in your hand. And again, it's the kind of game and the kind of materials where you can really play together, you can cooperate, you can interact. There's even a storytelling game where you can use the dice just as a tool to work on your storytelling ability. Continue the story, branch the story, whatever. So that would be a nice tool for folks on a date, I think.
I'm going to mention one more game. This one's a little bit unconventional in terms of date games. It is a game that can play a couple different player counts, but it still works at two players. It is a cooperative game. It is The Grizzled by Simon.
Oh, that's not exactly the kind of theme that you would normally associate with a date.
Well,
it's World War One and we're all going to die.
Yeah, but you know, you're working together and like there's this kind of like brotherhood of desperation feeling to the game.
I love the game.
It's like even losing the game just feels wholesome. It's so weird. I don't know if it's the art.
I always come out of it feeling good.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know how to explain it, but like it feels wholesome even though it's this hopeless, horrible situation that's going on in the game.
I agree. So at least for you and me, this is a good date game.
Yeah.
All right.
It's definitely unconventional.
We learned something
I'll
today.
Say that. It is unconventional in that regard, but I really, really like it. And with the At Your Orders expansion, it actually makes it a tiny bit easier, which is nice.
Good to know.
Yeah, but that is The Grizzled from Simon.
Okay, speaking of unconventional themes, I have one last one.
Okay.
Brave Rats from Blue Orange.
Okay, this is like some weird combination of love letter and war.
Yeah, it really is. And the theme is that the prince from one clan is trying to win the heart of the princess from the other clan. And the key is that this is happening with both clans simultaneously.
Well, you know.
But it's got these cute little cartoon rats. And it's, again, super portable. It's 18 or 20 cards. And you're obviously very interactive, playing a card against each other and trying to take these little tricks of two cards each time. Tons of special powers, and it is all about love winning in the end. So I like it for that. It's not really the kind of game you can put down and pick up again later, but it plays in about 5 minutes, so who cares?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that was our idea for date games.
Mm-hmm. Many ideas. We threw a lot of games out
there. Many ideas. A lot more than I would have thought we would have had, mm-hmm. actually. But several of our listeners on our Facebook community also had ideas for what they would like to play on Valentine's Day, either as a date with their significant other or as a whole family with their kids. Chrissy says she's hoping to play Walking in Burano. I've heard a little bit about that one. It looks really beautiful and seems like a good two-player game, although not necessarily a very portable one.
Yeah. Okay.
Several different people, Seth and Jeremy and at least one other person, all suggested Love Letter. I think there's going to be a lot of Love Letter played on Valentine's Day.
Is Love Letter a good two-player game? I don't really think I've ever parsed it as a good two-player game.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is. I think it would be a better family game, you know, three or four or five players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Love Letter to me seems like more than a two-player game. I think that's probably one of those, we'll bring it out for the family kind of things.
I think so, yeah.
Yep. Our community also liked Tussy Mussy. Jeremy mentioned Tussy Mussy. And a few people obviously commented and agreed because the game is perfect
it's a great game.
For the occasion.
Well, and to be fair, that one works just as well at three or four players as it does at two. So mm-hmm. it's not mm-hmm. two players only.
They also mentioned Chocolate Factory, which is a game that I haven't played.
I haven't either. I don't know much about it, although it looks delicious. I did play The Chocolatiers when I was at Origins. That one was really neat. It was a puzzly game where you're trying to fill your 6-segment box with exactly the right combination of chocolates.
Okay, sure.
So that was a fun one.
So you're given like a goal or something like that, and you're trying to draft those essentially or something?
You're trying to draft ones and get the best points. And you can do different combinations and side goals. Everybody is trying to go for slightly different objectives, but in the end, there's a lot of drafting of the same stuff and taking it away from other people.
Okay.
Jeremy also mentioned Parfum and Cacao. I know literally nothing about these, but just from the names, they sound nicely appropriate for Valentine's Day.
They sound like they smell good or taste good.
Don't taste your games, folks. I don't know. If I was going to pull out games to play with the family on Valentine's Day, I would probably pull out Filler, which is all about making delicious pastries, or Rocky Road a la Mode, which is all about selling delicious ice cream,
mm-hmm.
or maybe Dinosaur Tea Party, because what better day to dress up and have a fancy tea party than Valentine's Day?
Very fancy. Well, thanks so much to members of our community for weighing in on games that they're looking forward to playing with their families on Valentine's Day. But this show's coming out before Valentine's Day, so there's still a chance for you to weigh in and let us know what you're looking forward to playing if you haven't done that already.
The easiest way to get to our Facebook group is to go to thefamilygamers.com/community.
There's all sorts of different ways that you can find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by going to @FamilyGamersAA on any of those platforms.
You can, of course, email us, Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends about it. And maybe shoot us a rating or even a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts from.
We would be delighted to see those reviews come in. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to see how First Move Financial can help you stack up the victory points.
Well, that's going to be it for us this week.
All right. Well, until next week, everybody. Play games with your kids.